Okay, we have board time Wednesday, October 22nd at 1:30.
So normally we approve the records of the previous meeting.
Those minutes haven't yet been finished.
But we're not going to approve them then.
Nope, we'll bring them to you next week.
Okay, so we're going to go right to Lower Columbia Fish Recovery.
Okay, and that's Francine's and, to talk about.
Yes, hi, Commissioners. And with me is Kathy Myers, our benefits manager as well. We've been approached by Lower Columbia Fish Recovery Board, who it's an agency. It represents various interests in Southwest Washington, including five counties. And they have approached us to join, to use our services for financial, including accounts payable, accounts receivable, and treasurer's office, and also to participate with us on in the benefit programs that we offer. So what I'm here for today is to get direction from the board, because there are some considerations that were board policy earlier that we need to that we need to revisit with this request.
This is one of the boards I sit on, Lower Columbia Fish Recovery Board, and I think I understand that Collins County has been doing this. Mm-hmm. And when it was first shared with me, I was afraid that we were doing everything, but there's actually the cost to us is like an in-kind contribution where we use staff to do the work. And I think the biggest question that we stumbled on here, that was the policy that when we first adopted our self-insurance, mm-hmm. that we took on, remember that?
Yes, we did.
We took on a lot of people that we were interconnected with at no cost to us, but they are under our policy. So they would pay the full bore. It's kind of like our turn. The Lower Columbia Fish Recovery Board is that same agency that will be doing the $500,000 in additional work to fulfill our lawsuit with Environmental Services. And they are the agency that we submit our projects to, and everybody else submits their projects to. Mm-hmm. And this agency picks the project. The project mm-hmm. is in Clark County and it's for the clean water. So I was wrestling with it back and forth. Do we stay with policy or do we recognize this as one of our partners to where we provide in-kind services and go differently than what we started off in our policy. Our policy was not to add any others that we haven't already added. Now, it could be that this is one that we just didn't think about, that we'd ever come upon. But I think that they are true players, and we benefit one another. And so my recommendation is that we accept the project and go through sure. Francine's office.
Can I just help just a little bit there? We've had agencies that have been that the county has provided services for previously, and some for a number of years. For example, CRESA is a partner. They're a separate agency that we help provide services for. The RTC, there's various other agencies. So there is a precedent in helping these agencies, and we do charge them for those services. Mm-hmm. So that is also part of the arrangement. What Commissioner Mielke is specifically referring to is when we went self-insured, we limited the participants to the self-insurance plan to those that were currently either in the county or an existing agency that was in a relationship. Mm-hmm. So what Commissioner Mielke is referring to, we would have to change the interlocal that we have with those agencies if we allow someone else in. They would have to agree to that through a new interlocal.
I think my other argument is that while they were one of our partners, they just weren't part of our healthcare program.
Well, actually, yeah, we didn't provide services for them at all. It was all being done by CalITS. And for the last 10 years,
right.
that CalITS has provided all of the financial services for them. So this would be a new relationship.
Yeah.
It's
so
new.
So if we didn't extend and add them to our list, then they would continue to have Cowlitz County.
No, Cowlitz is.
What would they do as an alternative?
We're kind of the big brother in the organization.
I think that for the financials, the treasury and payroll services, there's not an issue.
Right.
And the auditor, treasurer, and HR are willing to put them on for those. The real
five employees?
It is five employees. So the options that are available to them, there is a state program, PEB, it's the Public Employees
Benefits Board.
So it's designed to allow other state agencies to have benefits through this organization. That's the purpose of that organization. So that's one option that's available.
Why wouldn't they choose that option?
Well, Kathy talked with them, and then the response was, you know, it's very convenient to have a full service provider through the county. So all your payroll, all your benefits, everything gets done in one location. They're a small organization. It makes it easy for them, honestly. That's my understanding of what their reaction was to that. They also they can get their own little small group plan, or they can buy insurance on the state exchange at the level now. So there are options. My understanding is the employees are all in the Regents plan, which is a self-funded plan. Another option is we allow them on, but only let them take Kaiser as their health insurance plan.
So then we wouldn't have to go to the other agencies on the spreadsheet.
Go to the other agencies or have their risk
modify the agreement.
Or have their risk.
Wouldn't have to do that.
Right. So there are a couple of options.
It might be a little awkward because the Lower Columbia Fish Recovery Board covers clean water issues and fish issues between here and through Lewiston County. So I don't think there's any Kaiser providers up there.
Are all the employees located in Longview, or are they spread out?
They're mostly in Longview, down there on 15th. Okay. And there's a Kaiser right there.
Yeah,
so there's the Kaiser Longview? Yeah. Oh, okay, that's better.
What are they doing now?
They're with Cowlitz County.
Cowlitz County.
Well, I mean, for this benefit.
Whatever Cowlitz offers, they
why would they switch?
I
think you just answered that. Yeah. We're doing the other services. And they would like to be able to have integration.
Well, Cowlitz is ending.
We're not doing anything.
No. So Cowlitz is doing all of those things.
Yes.
Cowlitz has put them on notice that they are ending their relationship. They don't want to provide any services to outside agencies anymore.
Agency.
Mm-hmm. That's what I was told.
Well, are they dropping their participation?
They're ending any financial support.
Just the financial.
And their participation on Cowlitz County's benefits programs.
There's no actual financial here as far as money handed out. It's just the paperwork, and we're reimbursed for everything that they do. I think they get their money from the state.
Right.
And so we just write the checks. And, yeah.
Well, I was going to say, I would assume our relationship with them, should we decide that they are going to participate us, would be like any of the other agencies.
Yes.
Currently, we bill them for the services that we provide them. It's a proration of what their usage is. And so that was just an assumption. The real issue, as Francine has stated, is if we do this, do we want to offer them the ability to participate in the region's health plan? That's really the decision that we're asking about, because that will take time and additional work that we would have to prepare for.
And just for the record, it's Regents and our dental plan,
right,
which are both self-funded.
Treat that the same as adding members at this time of year onto the health plan?
Well, really, overall, whether we bring them in and just put them on Kaiser or we make all plans available, it's work that needs to be done. Mm-hmm. When it comes to the self-insured plans, it's really a question of, do we want to take on additional risk by adding members to the plan? Because we don't know what their health status is. And so just like an insurance company, they're going to look at their insured population and determine, you know, are they a good risk or not?
Mm-hmm.
You know? So that's really the bottom line in terms of our self-insured plan.
Well, when I come in, you didn't know what my health condition was, that I had
six bypass surgery, two back.
Yeah, had we known that, we would have reconsidered.
You didn't know any of that. So any new employee that you hire, you don't require them to take a physical examination.
These aren't our employees.
These aren't our employees. So, yes, our employees, we take them as you come to us. But
right.
This is a decision point. Do we want to include an outside agency to participate?
I would think that there are other outside agencies as well. There's so many that we could, once we open this door, then we're going to have me too, how about us, and we end up with either an inconsistency and say, well, we're just going to be very, because they asked and you didn't, or we just simply have a policy. There is already provision provided by the state. They must be providing that benefit to hundreds or if not thousands of small agencies like this. That's what it's for.
Mm-hmm.
I would think that because they're also homed in, their home is in a different county, it would be starting a precedent that is really going to be difficult for us to defend why we would say no to others who are in our county.
You could envision, you know, benefit shopping, which county has the best benefits, and I want to be with you.
Uh-huh.
Isn't there something you said for a larger
Mark, are you and the treasurer going to provide services independent of this decision? Yeah, are you going?
That's up to them. That's up to the LCRB. If they decide that they have to have financial services provided by one of the five counties they serve. That's in their charter. Okay, whether we become a full service provider and do everything for them.
Okay.
It doesn't say that.
So of the five, if Cowlitz no longer wants to do it, geographically we're the most proximate.
That we are to Longview, of course.
Yeah. So logically we would be the provider.
We know we have a strong relationship and partnership in the past, and it has become even deeper now because
of this lawsuit settlement
organization. Who's in charge of that has been put in charge of that. And I think that we might continue to be more influential if we were tied a little bit tighter together.
So there's no
cost to this. It's an in-kind work that we do.
Well, I understand that we charge for our costs, but included in this report is added risk and inheriting whatever kind of health issues may cost the whole pool more.
Mm-hmm.
And that is different than providing administrative services for them. That does not come with the risk. This could bump up the rate.
Isn't it just as likely that these five are healthier than the average county employee and they could lower our risk?
Yeah, it could be either way.
Yes.
We don't know. But that's why the state provides that other alternative, because if you consider open the door for this one, well, why wouldn't we do the Porter, Camas, and Washougal and Ridgefield and all the others that we have very good close relationship with?
I think for the same reason we didn't kick the other people off. We had a working relationship. We didn't have to bring on RTC, Southwest Clean Air, all the cemetery districts, the law library. We had a working relationship, and so therefore we made them inclusive. And I think it's very important that we have recognized a working relationship that has grown with Lower Columbia Fish Recovery.
What was the thinking behind those that did make the list?
They've always been part of our program. Historical.
In other words,
so we grandfathered them.
They were already part of us.
They were part of our healthcare
committee.
We didn't
open anything new at that
time.
We just moved them over.
Right.
Isn't there some philosophy, too? I mean, to be honest, the more total members you have, the more you spread the risk, and the larger the block you have for leverage when negotiating.
That's,
I mean, there's something said for total numbers.
That's true, but once you get past that critical mass,
right.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And we're well past that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Has Mark Wilson weighed in on this when it comes to the risk, Mr. Risk Manager?
Wilson?
Broker rates our plan.
So he's not involved in this,
even though
this talks about.
No, we do.
It's not.
That's what we do.
Okay, so it's a different kind of risk.
It's a
potential rate increase, maybe, depending on.
Right.
It could go either way.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
How many other, if we open up the door for this one agency, How many other agencies could potentially approach us to shop?
Well, I've had several over the years that have called, and I've kind of nicely pushed them away. So it hasn't gotten to this level.
It hasn't been our approach to be a provider of benefits for the larger community.
But you always have the opportunity to review each one of them individually, either say yes or no, just like you're having to review this one right now. And according to what Tom was saying, Fish Recovery Board has been working very close with the Clean Water people. I would imagine that means Senator Don Benton with the environmental type people for probably several years in that up and down the river. So to me, it just seemed like logical that we would go ahead and say, since there's no financial risk to what the county's currently doing, I don't think we should turn them down. And we don't even know for sure if the state provides a program for them or not. If they kick them out, maybe they won't even have a program at all.
Do we know that?
See where they have a program.
Yes, there's an application process they would go through to apply to the state for them to evaluate whether they're going to allow them on the plan or not.
Could the state just simply say no?
Yeah, probably, but not likely.
So we wouldn't be leaving them high and dry. We could, I assume the natural thing would be for them to apply to the state. There's no cost for them to be able to apply and see whether or not they get accepted. And if they somehow they get rejected, then potentially we want to be a good neighbor. We don't want to leave them high and dry.
Right.
We could potentially be a relief valve for them.
They had the option to leave us high and dry in the lawsuit, and they didn't do that.
Why would we want to drive somebody to Olympia when they can go 43 miles away?
But I think it's the working relationship.
Right.
And it's becoming more together than before.
Yeah.
They could have turned this down when it was offered to them to monitor the $500,000 a year.
Huh? We can do all of that. We can do all of the administrative work that they're asking.
Really,
the only question is as Commissioner Norris,
the policy.
What is the health policy that
we're going to which ought to be standardized? Yeah. I assume that also, if they apply through the state and then it was state health coverage, they're not going up to our capital to get service.
They'd be a local provider.
They have local providers, so we're not inconveniencing limiting their local choices.
The state offers a Kaiser plan, and they also offer a plan similar to our region's plan.
But Kathy, are we still going to do their payroll for them and cut their checks? Is that part of what
that
we're
going to
do?
That would be
market.
Yeah, do their administrative services, if that's the decision.
I mean, so is it more just as much work if we're cutting their checks and then we have to go with a state-provided
plan? Instead of sending the money with our plan, it goes to wherever they choose. It's no different for us.
It's a lot more for us.
It's a lot more work for them to administer.
It seems payroll like the template's already there. It is what it is. But I have no clue.
Certainly, I share the same kind of healthy partner, good neighbor relationship intention here that Commissioner Mielke is supporting. And certainly, that working relationship is good. It's healthy. It's something that, especially with this, them providing the $300,000 over the next, 5 years or so, 5 or 6 years, that's all good. And it sounds like if they want us to be able to provide those services for all the administrative services, we will. And we just simply charge them for whatever it costs us, and it does not increase us our costs. But whatever we do when it comes to opening the door for agencies, the policy that says by what criteria do we choose surely ought to be defined up front so that we're not making exceptions and playing favorites and somehow making every decision kind of a unique decision. And at this point, rather than saying yes, green light, because we want to be nice to you, we don't know about all the other agencies that we also want to be nice to and have good, healthy relationships with. I would suggest that we don't make a decision yes today, but instead invite you to put together a list of who else could ask us in the future potentially and see whether or not there's a policy that would make sense that would make it consistent, simple, straightforward, fair, equitable for everybody.
How much time are you going to put on that, David? If they need to get, if they need to get coverage fairly quick, if Calix is kicking them out, then they need to get coverage. And as long as there's no cost, no matter which group it is, if they're government employees or state employees or whatever it is that wants to become part of this and they're willing to pay the full cost of the program, why do we care?
Well,
why do we care?
Haste is a poor force when it comes to making decisions. How much time is there a time frame for Cowlitz County to discontinue their service?
They're ceasing their services as of the 16th of December.
Okay.
So their health insurance goes through the end of the year.
Okay. And so at the end of the year is really, how long would this agency be in a difficult position because they don't have time to apply to the state? Is this kind of a real short notice that they were cut off without foresight?
I would assume that their health care said, we're cutting you off January 1st, that they're cut off.
Mm-hmm.
And these processes take time. It takes time for our health department to accept them. We have to submit them a request or notification, one or the other. But I hate to think that these people would say, I thought we were partners. Before, we didn't have a problem when they were paying for all the overhead, and I was a part of that board, and Cowlitz County was picking it all up. But now they're in charge of $3 million of how it's going to be spent of our money in our county, and I think it would make a stronger relationship and we would benefit in the longer run.
Do they have, would it be difficult for them to be able to apply to the state and get their answer, or are they kind of really pressed for time?
The application process is right online, and so they can get all that information submitted.
So they have time.
I don't know what the state's turnaround time is.
Can you find out?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because we don't want to put them in a pickle. And whatever we do here sets a precedent, sets a direction, establishes a policy, whether we define it up front or not. It should be well thought out so that otherwise we're going to have more of these conversations with other organizations asking us the same question, and how will we choose if we don't have it nailed down?
I'd like, we are partners and other commissions, Southwest Clean Air, mm-hmm. we do it here. We don't even sit on many of these fire districts, but yet they're on here. You're completely independent of Clark County. At least on North County Fire District, we sit on that board. So there's a whole bunch of here that
I don't see
we aren't represented on that we have in our program.
I don't see the clean air on here, do you?
It's called,
oh, that third one from the top.
SWCAA.
Yeah. Oh.
So the top section here represents those agencies that
we're
are on our medical and dental and
yeah,
life and disability.
That's the whole.
Mm-hmm. HIC, they're only on Kaiser because they're a nonprofit. They can't be on our self-insured plans.
Mm-hmm.
The fire district, we have one fire district that's on our Delta Dental plan, and that's been in place even before I've been here. The shaded area, we're not providing any of those services to any of those agencies. So some of these you can see it's just payroll.
Mm-hmm. So my appeal, just to make sure that we are orderly and we think it through, would be to have this conversation next week. Between now and then, you could provide us with the list of others that could potentially shop at Clark County,
mm-hmm.
and ask us the same question.
I think most of the other ones, like Agency on Aging, Agency on Aging.
Mm-hmm. They're already on here.
Are they on here?
Not that.
Well, I don't think so.
You're right, they're not.
But I also know that they take care of their own. I'm not sure what they do.
They're a lot larger, too. I mean, they're
mm-hmm.
SWAT compared to the fish recovery.
Yeah.
Board is a lot. It's just got a lot more employees, a lot more of a larger
yeah.
budget.
I think if we weren't tied together at the hip with them, I'd feel a lot stronger the way you are. But because we are tied at the hip,
the $3 million that it'd be nice to wine and dine our partner in enhancing Clark County.
And there's good merit to that. I just like to see who else are we not aware of that we also have good working close relationships with that could end up with the same conversation. Is it two or three, or is it a dozen? I have no idea. Do you?
No,
do you have how many treasurers?
My big concern is that here we're putting the employee that needs to make sure he gets health and welfare and he needs to make sure he gets a paycheck. We're putting him right in the middle of this, and if there was something on this piece of paper here that would show me that there was going to be a huge cost to Clark County, I'd say no. But where I can see here that it's not a cost, and I can see that we're covering other people the same way, I would just as soon make a motion, Mr. Chairman, that we approve taking him in.
Do we know where to look at other possible partners that might come in? We
will next week.
I'm thinking about the one like CREDC, for example.
I would limit it to those that are governmental agencies that we provide some funding to.
Or we have a commissioner sitting on with a vote.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I kind of like
and
that.
And whether they're in Clark, we would have limited it to Clark County, but this is a Cowlitz age. It's on the fringes.
But it's five counties, I believe, and there's either four or five county commissioners that sit on it. So it's a lot like SWAT, actually.
Yeah.
I don't have a heartburn for waiting a week to see if we can look at other things and come. No, we can't even go back and say, like the cemetery districts or mosquito. We don't have anything to do with that at all, but yet they're on here. But if I can't think of any others, but we could. Are we any criteria for 1 week?
So that's how
we come back next week.
The right criteria.
Make a decision?
Yeah. Sure.
Let's do that, and then we probably all of us would feel better that way.
That would be making a much more informed decision.
Yeah.
And Commissioner Barnes, you mentioned about potentially leaving employees without coverage. That's not going to happen. That's not even an issue in this conversation because if for some reason the state says no, then of course we would make sure that we step up.
And we would suggest to them that in the meantime they at least apply to the state and get that process moving, not knowing what the outcome of this board will be.
I would encourage them to do that. Okay. It doesn't cost them money to do so. It's not an application
fee. As we weigh the circumstances and conditions.
Also, Commissioner, in the meantime, my office, as well as the treasurer's office, we need to begin looking at the service contracts that have to be put in place. Mm-hmm. So my suggestion is that we go ahead and continue. We've already started with the processes and getting them ready, but we have to have the service contracts in place in order for us to provide those services. So my suggestion would be to continue going forward with that. And if we do end up having to add human resources as well, that would be a third service contract.
Sure, and that sounds reasonable. Because we're just simply, it's logical, and we're filling the logical gap left by Cowlitz County. We're the next nearest kin for them to provide that.
Get all the paperwork done, all the paperwork all ready to go.
Because the only alternative to that is to approach one of the other counties in the network of five, and which is a more distant cousin than we are.
But they're a lot smaller. Mm-hmm. The five counties.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the RSM.
It would be the least impact for us.
Okay,
thank you.
Thank you.
So we'll appreciate it.
For
next week.
Thank you for all the information. And
yes.
Francine, would you ask Keith and Carolyn to pop in? Thank you. All right, Commissioners, next on the agenda. Over the course of the last 13 months in my time serving as your administrator, I have brought to you some short plat documentation for R18 properties.
And you heard the gas.
Which is super high density and very small lot sizes. And each time I do that, you express your concern regarding those small lot sizes. So
I brought Marty here to have a discussion with the board about about that zoning and what kind of change you would like to see to it. I think our position is that we need multifamily, and those R18 single-family homes are in multifamily zoning, but we allow them to split the property into small lots. I think that we can, if the board desires us to do so, we can stop subdividing and creating 2,000-square-foot lots, but we would recommend that we still have multifamily housing mm-hmm. zoning for apartment complexes and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So, Marty,
So real quick, I think this actually has about a 10 or 12-year history when the county was going through its first growth management plan update in 2004. And one of the ideas is that the Act requires a variety and choice in housing, and the cities and counties plan accordingly. So these are multifamily zones. The lowest density of these zones is 12 units an acre, and the highest is actually 43. So you have R12, 18, 22, 30, and 43. In those discussions, there was some interest by the development community and the cities to allow some small lot single family on some of these multifamily zones. They're kind of on the lower end of the density. I mean, 30 and 43 is very dense. 12 and 18 is on the lower density of the multifamily zones. So when you look at our county code, under the development code, where our multifamily chapter resides, 4220, when you go to the use table, I've highlighted this for you, in those zones 12, 18, and 22, we do allow single-family detached development. So you get those small lots that are platted and then homes built on those. You'll see 30 and 43 actually are prohibited. So you want those higher density zones, they're intended, you get apartment buildings. You get true density on those in those zones.
Multi-floor.
Yeah,
multi-story.
Two, three, four stories. So the idea would be that to address this issue would be a simple amendment to the code to look at the single-family detached dwellings in these zones and treat them like the 30 and 43, just put an X. It would be prohibited. Mm-hmm. Two things to think about in this is code amendments go through the Planning Commission. And code amendments are really related to the development of in the county. Usually those are kind of, we kind of pass those along as a courtesy to the Development and Engineering Advisory Board as well. So two groups that you may want their
sure.
input.
Yeah, well, I think it'd be good to have their input.
So that's what we have.
In other words, you put an X there and it says that if you're going to have a piece of land, you're going to build a house on, it needs to be a reasonable sized piece of land. And that sounds like a logical step to take. You're either going to build condos or apartments or multi-story,
right.
Or you're going to end up with some of the, I don't want to see any more of these 28 and 30-foot wide lots.
Yeah.
I'm thinking you're building tomorrow's slums today. This is unincorporated area of Clark County, not downtown inner city Portland.
We don't have a lot of multifamily zones throughout the county. So you kind of want, I mean, Mark's point is you do want to keep that multifamily, and really you want to use it for that intended use, which is multifamily, not single family detached.
Well, although if you'll remember, David, I expressed my opinion about the 139 lot one out there that were all crowded together. There was no room for park, no room mm-hmm. for anything.
Yeah.
And I when you can reach from one window to the other, bedroom to the other, I mean, it's a ridiculous
thing. That's when you turn sideways to walk between them.
Right, that's absolutely. Yeah, and the fences, you can't turn sideways to walk between the two houses when they have a fence between them. So,
right. Not very good quality of life.
And hold on that.
One of the things I think, or a couple of the things we run into, and we're starting to recognize it now, is that stormwater runoff. It becomes more expensive to deal with that water, the maintenance becomes more problem. And the other thing, when you end up with that kind of people in that kind of density in that small area, your infrastructure is overtaxed. And that goes back to, we go back and try to widen the roads. In fact, even our road standards have come down to where you can't park on both sides and get two cars through it. So I think quality of the standard of living, I think, is really deteriorated when we don't allow family places to be. I think we could do both. We could do condos. But I think when it comes down to homes, that there's a clear definition between a condo and a home. And I think we've gotten to where it seems like the easy way to do it is to just build the multiple stories and then look back and know we're real fortunate. Our infrastructure, our road infrastructure, is very, very good. And because it's very, very good right now, we're getting away with a lot of things that we wouldn't normally be able to do on our fee holidays that's out there to create jobs. So I have a real issue. It was just outside the city, north of the mall. And you said 38 foot wide.
35, right?
It was wide enough for a 16 or 8 foot door and walk-in door. And that's all you saw when you went down there. And they were all hooked together. And
well, I wish we had done this before the guy developed the lot, 1 acre right above it, Brian's house, because he's got 7 houses built on that thing, and they're so close together. That
I agree. We've inherited this, and we wish we would have corrected it already. So it's absolutely my support to bring it forward and to correct it.
All right.
So what are we looking at? What size are we looking at?
Well, this is just already defined.
Marty, what would it take to have a lot large enough that would accommodate a family-sized home
and a garden
and have enough permeable surface around it to absorb all the water that comes off the roof of the house?
Well, Commissioner, the proposal here is just to remove the single-family use
in the
multifamily zone.
Yeah. Because then our smallest single-family lots, like 4,000 or 5,000 square feet, rather than 2,200.
Mm-hmm. It's not to create a new single-family lot size standard.
Yeah.
It's just to say, in the multifamily zone, if you're going to build residential, you're going to be building multifamily. You're not going to be
platting
putting
lots.
It into little bitty lots and putting little bitty houses there.
And that's what we've done. We've gone down so far that we end up with disputes between neighbors. You can't even park in front of your house. One thing we have done, I've noticed that we made the setback a little bit farther so the car could park in front of the garage instead of the street. But in many cases, if someone was to park in the street, you can't get an emergency equipment down the road. And that's what I'd like to back away from, to allow that access there, to allow... And you're right. I understand that there's a difference between a condo, but what I'm talking about, I guess, is a condo because they're connected.
Right. They're attached. It's attached housing.
And we're using them as single family dwellings.
Right. And that's what this addresses is when you see those subdivisions that are platted with, you know, 2,200 square feet, 3,000 square foot lots, if you look at where they are developed, they're going to be likely developed in these multifamily zones at 12 and 18 and 22 units to the acre. So this code amendment would prevent that those land divisions and those small single family detached developments from occurring in those zones. You'd go to, if you're building single family detached, you go to the single family zones at 5,000 square foot lots or 6,000 and up.
So assuming there's a pipeline where a developer buys land in a multifamily zone and has subdivided it into small lots and hasn't yet come in for platting and we pass this code amendment,
they'd still be allowed to go through that.
Well, if they've subdivided it, they have come in for platting.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
So absolutely, green light, move it along.
Well, Rhodes End Farm, if you want to see what the problem is, just go to Rhodes End Farm on Staples Road.
I know the problem. I agree with you. So do you need a vote on this, or just simply consensus?
Consensus.
What are we consensus to?
No more tiny separated houses
in that zone.
In a multifamily zone.
Yeah. So what are we looking at?
Condominiums, apartments, townhouses.
Oh, for the actual development, what you'd see?
So we're talking about, right. Don't put them so close together. What are we talking about?
So they'll be attached.
Detached.
No,
they would have to be
right detached. Right now the concern is, right. That we're building all these small, tiny homes.
Right. On small lots.
On right. Small lots that individuals own.
Yep.
And eventually the state of maintenance of these houses is going to deteriorate over time. If you have an apartment complex owner, what he has is an investment. So he has an incentive to keep the property in good operating order, clean and tidy. So
in common areas.
This would not address, this is very specific code amendment where we're dealing with single family detached. Mm-hmm. Okay? If somebody wants to build some nice row homes, right? Which
what's a row home?
Well, if you go out along Officers Row, right, and you go past the fifth, Mr. Schulte lives in a row house. They're brownstones. They're two-story. They're attached. They're usually okay. Four or five to a block. And that doesn't prevent people from wanting
Facing
to build row
Pierce
homes.
Near Park, yeah, an example, right. If you take Evergreen through the fort,
right.
Mm-hmm. And you go out the east side.
Out toward Crosley Bowl.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, out towards Christina's Restaurant.
They're not attached.
They are attached. On the right side of Evergreen, okay. And they're very attractive, and they're very
well.
But you can give people more living space because you don't have to have the gap between the houses, and so they're more comfortable. They're cheaper to construct.
Well, not in that one.
Okay. So second question: how do we deal with the stormwater on those?
That'd be up to the developer.
They still, stormwater is independent of the type of housing you build.
So
you have to,
I guess impervious surface, you have to
deal with the stormwater as you deal
if
with it.
I'm looking for some permeable surface, whether it be in the front or the back, mm-hmm. that they'll have a green space.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, it's not going to be solid concrete and
no.
House.
Right.
And then what we do, we go down the street and build a big water retention and whatnot. And then we end up policing it, mm-hmm. or owning it, or building it, or maintaining it, and that's what we have no funds for. And so I'd like to avoid that, and I don't know how to avoid that other than putting the permeable surface equivalent to what they need for that piece of property somewhere on that piece of property.
I think what we're talking about is a couple of different increments for correcting situations out there. This is one, and what you're addressing is another. This moves with this part along the path of correction,
right.
But there's other room. There's more room for improvement still,
so
which would address some of the things you're speaking of.
If you look at something that's zoned R-12 or R-18, right now you can divide that land up into small lots, and people build their homes on it, and you have all these individual rooftops and drains going to some
stormwater
facility that's
yep.
owned by an HOA. Contrary, the other side of the coin would be, well, you have like garden style apartments with maybe parking areas that have pervious pavement or some other type of pervious surface rather than driveways, and they have larger common areas and a stormwater facility that's going to be owned by the income and producing investment owner of that multifamily project. So I think there might be some better outcomes when you say, okay, these zones are really meant for building, garden-style apartments and a higher density.
In the city limits.
Well, in these zones that we have in the county, there aren't a lot of them. I mean,
well,
we have single-family zoning than we do multifamily.
I had a builder come to me the other day, wants to rezone a commercial spot to build another condo apartment complex And that's how we got in trouble before, is that we continue to build apartments and homes and no place for businesses.
Well, if it's commercial and they want to change it to multifamily, that would be a comprehensive plan amendment as well.
Yeah, but we're talking, Commissioner, we're land that's currently zoned for residential, keeping it residential, just prohibiting the construction of little cracker box houses.
Next to it.
Yep.
I don't know the answer, so I guess that's better than what we got.
Okay. Well, we'll proceed. We'll take it forward.
Planning Commission and Dean. Okay. Yeah, probably next month or
great.
Two.
Thank you.
Okay.
This is the one on Evergreen.
Yeah,
Steve Schulte. We have some out of 18th Street. I have to report. Park.
Is the green space?
Yep.
You can put green space.
Commissioners, with the Planning Commission's next month or two of docket items, we're probably talking just after the first of the year.
I would move it along as fast as you can.
Yeah.
So planning, I know Planning Commission's booked in November.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What's that?
I know Planning Commission is booked in November already, so it would probably be after the first.
You can't add this to their agenda?
Well, they already go 4 and 5 hours, as it is.
Okay, whatever you need to do to reasonably move it along.
Shorties of homes.
Before this meeting, it was going nowhere.
Right here.
Well, I'm glad it's going somewhere now.
We'd be happy that it's in motion, right?
To middle-class people.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks, Marty.
No, that'll do. Okay, commissioners, we have a 16-home neighborhood.
Somebody made a motion and seconded.
Actually, it was just consensus.
Okay.
Yeah, we're good. We got what we need.
Okay. So for the minutes, consensus says, yep, move it along, Marty.
Go move
it
along.
Thank you.
I'm not high now.
We have a 16-home neighborhood that wants the county to vacate a road, and they also have a parking issue because they have a high school nearby where students are parking in their streets.
Oh, you're talking about.
So Heath,
is that same one coming back?
So Heath and Carolyn are here to talk about that
issue.
Good.
Hey, Carolyn.
Hi. Yeah, so this is Regency Place, and I actually I'll kind of turn it over to Carolyn, but I just wanted to start it off by saying, you know, we received this as an issue and actually started working on it. And Carolyn actually spent quite a bit of time on this and actually went out there and met with the neighbors several times. And they've been great to work with. Mm-hmm. And we think we have a recommendation to move forward.
Great.
And we've also had some other things happen, kind of working with the schools and whatnot. And actually, I think Carolyn will tell you that she's been driving by the past couple of days and getting information from our sheriff's deputy, and it appears right now not to be that some of the issues have stopped. But anyway, go ahead. And
you beat me to my punchline already.
Yeah. Yeah. I so it used to rain there. It's not raining anymore.
Okay, so I gave you this map. Actually, I kind of put some notes on here and gave you a few maps and photos. Mm-hmm. So this is Union High School here. This is Costco. This is the Glad Tidings Church, and then Regency Place to the north. This is 192nd on the left side of that front picture. Mm-hmm. There were two issues that actually came from the board down to us, and one was the road vacation. The second was the request to put up no parking signs. So I took the no parking sign issue myself, and then I asked Pam Mason from Real Property Services to work with the folks on the road vacation. So this is the layout. We went out there and took a couple photos. You can see there are a lot of backwards parking. They were parking in front of the hydrant. They were parking in front of the mailboxes. And so also lots of reports of littering, some drug activity, and some sexual activity at the lunch hour.
You'd think we'd have something, you know, it sounds like high school students.
I know, that's what I said when I met with the school. So,
thank goodness.
So a couple things to understand is we are in this little peninsula, so I'm kind of giving you some jurisdictional information. This is the city of Vancouver here and to the south. Mm-hmm. This is the city of Camas to the east. And then Clark County has this little peninsula that dives down in here. And so this is that subdivision right here, and this is Union High School on this map. So just to give you a little orientation. So there's three of us all kind of together managing what's going on in the neighborhood.
I think I got the solution.
You do?
We'll give that to one of those cities.
Well, that's certainly an option.
You give the whole thing to the city.
So broke it down into three issues. One is the zoning and transportation network. We're being managed by three different agencies. So the littering, the sexual activity, the mailbox blocking, that kind of thing. Those come more under the nuisance category. And then, of course, the safety with backwards parking and some of the illegal parking near the hydrants and that kind of stuff. So went out and met with the neighborhood, really nice folks. It was one of the better public meetings I think I've ever had. And so they hosted me one night. I took a sample of the no parking sign, which is actually quite large because there's a number of conditions on it. And we looked at the Wazoo model that we did a few years ago, where we limited parking to residents only during certain high peak hours for the school. So did a neighborhood meeting, visited a few times to kind of get a sense of what was going on. The school followed up with some social media outreach to let the kids know that the illegal parking had to stop, and that they were facing having the ability to park in this neighborhood, potentially taking away from them. So that was actually pretty effective because we've gone back now, and I don't think any tickets have been issued. But we visited the neighborhood more recently, and yesterday with the deputy, today myself and our traffic engineer, Matt Griswold, and they were all legally parked. So that was good news that we've actually been effective without having to institute the no parking. Couple things about the school you should know is there's between 2,000 and 2,300 students. Available parking spaces for their students are 350-ish, I want to say. I have the exact number, but it's far below the eligible drivers that are in the high school. So you figure it's a four-year school, approximately half could be drive eligible. Not every kid gets their license at 16. But the capacity is far less than what the need is.
Yes, sir? Pause there. You're doing a great job. I'm curious, WSUV and the schools, that's a foreseeable problem. How in the world are these getting built with those problems built in? That sounds like such poor planning, and now we're having to deal with it, this school. So anyway, just a little commentary there. It's not our jurisdiction, but whatever it is.
About this area.
I think it's a typical high school problem. It doesn't come in, of course, with the junior high and the elementary. And I actually asked the school about that because I was a little surprised at the unbalance of numbers. And they said their high schools typically are in neighborhoods where that concentration of overflow parking is actually distributed better in the neighborhoods. So they have, it's a City of Vancouver school, and they have other high schools that have people that park in the neighborhoods that they don't end up with this heavier concentration of problems. So I thought that was kind of an interesting perspective.
Yeah. So who permitted that? That was City of Vancouver permitted that?
Let's see, Union is...
I thought it was Camas.
No, Union is Camas. Union is... No, it's Evergreen.
No, it is Evergreen, and it's City of Vancouver, and the resource officer was also assigned to Vancouver. Because I started out with the same assumption as you. We actually, the neighbors sent us to Camas, and Camas said, no, it's not us, it's City of Vancouver. So
it's just barely inside the city of Vancouver limits.
Right.
It is Evergreen School District.
But if you go to Evergreen High School, they have a parking problem there too.
They do. They do have challenges. But
college has a parking problem.
This one is particularly.
But Fort doesn't, and neither does Hudson Bay. They've allowed in the Skyview, and them all allowed for enough parking to take care of the students in the school.
You're right. I think what's exacerbating this is all field over here. Costco is having a problem on their east boundary. This school, the church allowed parking for a little while on their east boundary, but they were blocking the employees even from kind of getting near the entrance because they were filling up all this space, so they were sent away also. The school did say that the district is talking with the church potentially about entering into an agreement to allow the school parking on the property. I don't know whether that'll go forward. I know they did share with me that Costco will not tow, though. They were not willing to go as far as actually towing off the property for the kids that park there all day. So, let's see, what else about
the school? Kind of appears that down in the bottom right-hand corner of the school has an area that could be used for parking.
This is actually owned by the district, and the school asked about turning that into parking, and they don't have the funding and didn't have the plan to move that forward. So that is not moving forward.
So we stay focused. We got two parts there. Temporary relief here because they've got some word out, but high school memories are relatively short. So I assume you're still moving forward with the signs to, because that's quick and easy compared to vacation, and in parallel is the vacation that takes a little longer.
So that is the track that I've been on. That I was planning to bring the proposal to the board, and that's why we came today to find out whether you want to move directly to having a hearing. And so the proposal is to do a parking restrictions from 7 a.m. to 3 p.m. Monday through Friday from September to June. I asked a lot of questions about activities that may take place in the evenings and weekends. A lot of school fields are used for other types of sports. So sometimes you can get crowds from those as well. And they said those don't really occur on the Union campus where it attracts the weekend or evening traffic.
Are those the hours that the neighborhood residents are asking for?
Yes. That's what we came up with together.
Yeah. Okay.
They thought that was adequate. School starts around 8, but it lets out about 2:30. So
they're not concerned about extra, you know, like big ball games or things like that, the parking at that time. They're not concerned about that.
Correct.
Okay.
If that changes at the school, I would foresee them potentially asking to change the hours on the signing. The signing costs about $7,500 to $10,000. We'll have to manufacture and get them installed. That will take a little bit of time. First, you need to have your public hearing to make your decision.
That's a lot of money, a lot more than I expected. The neighborhood's willing to pay that?
30-plus signs, and they're large. I should have brought it up for you. But the sample is like this long and this wide. So we have to. We can put a lot of them on the light poles, so we won't have to dig in the yard as much. But about half are on light poles and half need posts. And it's like 150-foot spacing. So there's going to be a lot of signs in this neighborhood.
But all of these are exactly what the neighbors are asking for.
That's right.
Okay.
I emailed them
yesterday. Can you Photoshop the signs into a picture of the neighborhood so they can see what it might look like?
I took it with me. I actually took the sign with me. That's what I had it for.
Mr. Chairman, maybe if it's working what they're doing now by putting the word out to the kids and there's been no outlay of any money, why don't we, the board, authorize them if it occurs again and starts getting back to the way it was, David, then we automatically authorize them to go ahead with the signs. But if it isn't necessary to sign it and screw up the neighborhood, you know, and have all these big signs in front of the houses and look like we're the Gestapo.
Actually, it's the our position is to say yes or to say no to all the neighbors in the neighborhood who are asking us for relief. So if we say no, we're doing exactly what they're asking.
They asked for the high school, but they didn't put the money in there necessary to build the parking. Those same people are complaining. They're the fathers and mothers of the students that go to that school. And they should have made sure that when the school was built, the Evergreen School District, that they built adequate parking for 2,300 students. Mm-hmm. So now the county's getting their nose stuck into where I really have a problem with that. I think if you could do it without it, tell the people to go buy this extra property that shows here and blacktop it right there. Go buy all this extra property, blacktop it. Why should the county end up getting their tail in the ringer over and get all these young voters eventually get upset at the commission and stuff over what we're sticking our nose
in? I look at it a little bit different, and I go back and look at what happened at WSU, and we banned the parking, and it didn't take very long before they realized that in the middle of the day they couldn't have their friends over.
Or maybe we could talk
to
C-Man
have a Tupperware party or
meeting someplace else and haul the kids down the bus.
It didn't take very long that they found out that the inconvenience was as great to them as it was to the people they were keeping out.
So I did talk to the neighborhood about that, specifically based on, I was doing a lot of querying around folks that had gone through the WASU process. Mm-hmm. So I explained to the neighbors that they have to have permits, they would only be allotted so many guest permits, and they would have to manage that amongst themselves to be able to have, I'm a quilter, so I'm thinking of the church group that's quilting at 2 in the afternoon on a Wednesday and wants to have company over, and I wanted to make sure they realize that that's going to impact that. So that led them to asking for it only September to June. They thought they have more guests typically in the summertime, and then also they would manage it amongst themselves. They actually they're pretty friendly group. Mm-hmm. And so they actually figured they could share passes or borrow passes from each other to get through some of those challenges.
So we are talking about permit parking.
Correct, permit only.
Mm-hmm. I'm assuming also that the sheriff isn't just going to go out there all the time looking for revenue enhancement, but he's going to be responsive to the neighbors that say, it's happening and it ain't us, and at that point it's complaint driven. And because this is really recognizing the negative impacts to private properties. And these are the neighbors saying, we want relief, grant us the freedom to be able to handle our own problems at their expense. It doesn't cost the county anything. They're paying for all of this, right?
No,
we haven't. We paid for the WSU side.
Yeah, we county road fund, we paid for the
side.
It's a public roadway.
And the labor.
And the labor to install.
To put them up.
Yeah.
That's been
they actually offered to pay for the signs, but I explained to them that we expected it to be county road fund.
We did before, we didn't have all this information up there. We just said permit parking only.
But you gave, I actually took the Wazoo, they mocked the Wazoo one up for me, and it had days of the week, it accepted holidays, so this would not apply, the restriction would not apply on holidays, and so I had hours on it and days of the week on it.
Permit parking between Monday through Friday.
And I think theirs went till 7 p.m. because they have night classes.
This is really a two-step process. The first one is, all of the neighbors also want to have turn these roads in their neighborhood to private roads.
Mm-hmm.
If I would assume that if they did that, they wouldn't have to necessarily put these signs, or it certainly wouldn't be a county cost at that point. They could do what they want with their private roads, right? How long would it take for us to get through the process to grant them road vacation?
So Pam is really the expert on this. What I know of the process is it's rather lengthy, from what she explained. They have to reach out to other public agencies, make sure the land is not needed for public purpose. I, as the transportation division manager, I explained to the neighborhood that I would actually promote keeping them public. And the reason I would do that is because I want the connectivity between neighborhoods that helps reduces the direct access onto the arterial system. It's part of how we develop our road networks. And so the decision I explained was yours in the end, but that I would actually promote keeping them public for the connectivity of neighbors. There, I know the land just south of them is in for a land use change through the city of Vancouver to go from mixed use. They're going to split the parcel into partially commercial and then R30, which is apartments. We were just talking about that with Marty. So just south of them, potentially you could have condos, apartments, townhomes. And north of them is also underdeveloped parcels as well. And so I would like to keep that connection through from neighborhood to neighborhood through not privatizing the roadways.
If you privatize the roadways, then the police, ambulance, and fire has to get special permits to go on those private roads.
Well, I don't think that's...
Yeah,
they usually provide something at the gate, just like we do at the traffic light.
Right, yeah, so they'd have
they come
to
up and they could trigger that gate.
Because the road up there that I brought up at the convalescent home up on off of 78th Street that the city now says that belongs to all those apartments and Fort Vancouver Care Center, and the city won't touch it.
I'm not seeing the benefit why we would want to keep talk about these this dead end road right here
into the school.
Dead end at the school.
That's correct.
Why would we want to keep that again?
Actually, I shared with them that this stub that goes from 196 to the west edge of Union, that part of the stub I would not mind. But what has happened when this was developed? There's a stub to the north. And there's also a half street down here on the south end. So really it was intended to be completed by the development on the south end.
Oh, I see what you're talking about.
Right. And so Randy Prince is working with the city of Vancouver and the developer in this case. And I, again, it's just at the land use rezone phase. So there's not really an official development submitted. But we would be discussing when they do trying to complete the half street because that is how neighboring developments work with each other interactively. Hmm. So we would want the other half of that roadway completed, and then you'd have the stub to the north that would connect to the north side. So Randy shared with the neighbors this is what they shared with me, not mm-hmm. Randy, is that he did not intend to connect the two developments. Yeah. I don't know what they'll submit.
So let me go back then to where we think with the school making notification that the problem seems to have stopped temporarily. So is that what I understand?
So it's better than it was.
I see the
legal counsel shaking her head a while ago. She probably thinks it'd be better to put up the signs.
No, what I was thinking at that point is that it wouldn't be proper to say something will automatically happen in the future.
Oh, okay. I understand what you're saying. Okay.
Which you actually clarified. It's either to decide
yes
the no parking or not
well,
at this time.
I was wondering if we could control it by the school from time to time when it gets out of hand, the school come back and say, hey, we don't want anybody parking over there. If we catch you parking over there, you'll be in trouble.
Well, I think the dean of students and the resource officer are really the two that have made this happen. I asked Deputy Naramore not to ticket yet until we could really work through this issue. And so he is actually making individual contact with some of these drivers, running their plates, figuring out which of the students, and then having contact with them. That's what he told me he would do after we left. The dean of students put it out in the social media to really encourage compliance with the law. And so I think what they've done has been effective. The question is whether it'll go long term. I can't predict that. But
should we wait and see?
I think that's your choice. They've asked me to bring it forward to you. That's what I'm doing today.
I kind of like the idea of waiting. If we seem to have solved the problem that way, we've done it with existing, we'd save ourselves $10,000, $18,000.
Peter, you've been working on this for some time. Can you shed some light on this?
I don't know if I have any more information other than what's been shared. Maybe a clarifying question. Is there any way for the homeowners to volunteer to pay for the signs if they want to, or...
I actually don't know whether that's permitted. It's a regulatory sign.
We could do that. We could always ask if they wanted to participate. I would think that would be an appropriate path forward because it's their neighborhood. If all of them want to chip in and pay for the signs, and that's not only do they want it, but they're willing to pay for it, and all they need for us to do is say, you can pay the cost, and if that's what you want, we'll put up the signs.
I would share with you that I think the decision shouldn't be based on whether the neighborhood's able to pay for the signs or not pay for the signs. I think you need to decide whether you have a reason to restrict regular road users, which these students are and their parents are. Mm-hmm. They pay the gas taxes that pay for these roadways. Whether you want to restrict them or not, I think you need to decide that independently of how the signing goes in. Because I think that's only fair because you wouldn't want to disadvantage a neighborhood because they weren't able to pay for signs. You see the converse of that?
And I would be concerned if there were certain neighbors who didn't want to pay, refused to pay. How do we...
In other words, if it was 100%, all the neighbors want to participate, then that solves that problem.
Well,
that
would be highly unusual.
If the only reason we are going to say no is because of the funding issue, then would it be appropriate for the neighborhood association to fund it?
Mm-hmm.
And if they came to us and said, we'll pay the $10,000 or whatever it is, does it matter if all of them participated or if only two?
No, it's really the neighborhood association, however they govern themselves.
If a group did it. And again, that's only if the funding issue is the question that would stop us from moving forward.
And part of the way we looked at it, too, was looking at it from not only, it appears to be an inconvenience to the neighbors in particular, but also from a safety standpoint. You know, when you have cars blocking access, blocking fire hydrants, blocking mailboxes, it becomes kind of a safety issue. Therefore, it's something that from the county road network we can justify spending county road funds on because there's a safety issue associated with it. So that's why we hadn't come forward and proposed, that we request the homeowners pay for it because in this situation, it could be a county safety issue.
Yeah, I think if we felt the need to put the signs up, that we probably should pay for it and issue the permits. But I'd like to try it, see if it works with what they're doing.
The student council, did usually every high school has a student council. Did the counselor that you talk to get a hold of the student council and tell them the consequences of what they were doing if it didn't stop?
I actually took a picture of the Facebook post because that's basically what they did. Is they said, you know, there's illegal parking going on. If it doesn't get corrected, you're likely to lose your parking privilege because people are looking at a no parking zone. Right. So it was pretty
effective.
Yes.
So it sounds like there's a couple of issues here. One is just simply normal enforcement of legal parking.
Correct.
And the neighborhood at this point, now that we've had kind of a self-corrected situation that unfolded afterwards, that the neighbors at this point are, have they reconsidered? Have they responded to this and say to us that, well, the need's gone away? Or are they still saying, we want it because we expect it's just going to happen again?
I emailed with the president of the Homeowners Association yesterday, letting him know I was speaking today. Mm-hmm. I think their intention is they might listen to the recording later. And I was taking the proposal forward. Now, mm-hmm. I didn't mention to him because I didn't know when I was having that email exchange mm-hmm. that Deputy Nairmore had not shared with me that everybody was legally parked yesterday and I went out today. So they've not had, I mean, they're seeing it every day.
Yeah.
But I haven't had a discussion with them since we've seen that change.
Okay. My position on this is that if that homeowners association, with clear indication that they communicate to us, this is what they want, and it's a huge percentage, more than 80%, that says this is what we want you to do, I'm supportive of that. And they would, at this point, come back to us and say, even with this reprieve, we still want it, or now, you know, we'll back off, we're not, it's okay. So we look back to them to say, what do you want us to do? And I'm willing to do whatever they want us to do.
If next week you come back and they say that that's what they want, then I would go ahead and say...
Can we just condition, if Carolyn does that and that percentage threshold is met, mm-hmm. can Carolyn just proceed with scheduling the hearing that would be required rather than coming back?
Well, you know, one of the things as far as timing here is that, you know, it does take a few weeks in order to schedule the hearing, and
right.
I think we're notice. A few weeks out with notice and everything else. So there's going to be some time that overlaps here.
Yep.
So we could go ahead and schedule a hearing now, and then we could have, we could certainly
should
let the
needed,
residents know,
it.
And then, you know,
okay.
they could come in and talk, and the decision could be made right there at the hearing whether
sure.
or not to proceed
yeah.
or not.
Yeah. And that hearing is not a guarantee that we're going to approve it. It's
right,
a hearing to hear everybody
sure.
involved and then choose at that point. So
yeah.
certainly responsive government says we got all these homeowners that are asking, and so let's find out how the hearing comes out. So I'm supportive of that.
So Anita actually checked with Rebecca on your schedule, and it's not likely to be before you as a hearing till the end of November. You guys are very busy in November, and then we have the holiday in there. The 18th was full. So I think you're looking at the end of November for the hearing anyway. I found that out,
yep.
I think it was yesterday.
Whenever is appropriate.
So I think that gives me time to reach back out with
sure.
them.
And we can continue working with Deputy Nairmore and monitoring the
yeah.
situation.
I'd like to have their signature on the line of the where they live, and see the majority, you know, a healthy majority, 80% plus, signed up to remove the parking from in front of their house.
That's a super majority.
I actually have that right now, except one owner who is an absent owner.
Mm-hmm.
And so I actually have signatures from every other homeowner in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
So there's a high level of support.
Every other has 50%?
No, 15 of 16.
All
I have 15 of 16 signatures already.
Oh.
But that's before that we had some correction in the behavior.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I'm very familiar with the neighborhood,
yeah.
and that one home is abandoned, and the bank is tied up,
right.
and the
yeah.
neighbors are taking care of the property.
But it's
so that basically yeah. it is 100%. That's pretty good.
Basically, that's the same homeowners that didn't vote to put the money in to build the parking necessary to provide the 2,300 parking places.
I think that's an unfair extension because you assume that they had control over the school that went in after this neighborhood was built.
I'm in favor of it if they come back,
okay.
and let's go ahead and go through the process. Let's get her started.
Great. All right, so we got a green light.
Okay.
Okay.
You need to hide your chain because he can find it and yank on it.
I just hate to see all these young kids end up getting tickets and get a bad attitude about government, a bad attitude about families and neighborhoods and stuff like that, and maybe do things that they shouldn't do because we've helped create an atmosphere that's not very well.
But Commissioner Barnes, you've heard the term legally parked.
It's not that they
can't park in the neighborhood; it's that they have to park legally.
Yeah.
And I think that was my because that's really what I'm about is the traffic safety part of it, right?
Yeah.
And so I explained to the school that it's harder for me to really say I have to have these parking signs if they've corrected the behavior and they're doing it legally. So because then it becomes really a nuisance problem, not an actual safety problem.
Right.
So I think I sorted out very clearly in my mind between what is a nuisance and what is safety. The one thing I find challenging is the post office delivery because the post office says you can't park in front of the the mailbox, but Deputy Nairmore said we cannot ticket for that, which I thought that was kind of interesting. People are not getting their mail for days at a time if they're parked in front of the box. So that was a little bit difficult for them, but again, he's not able to ticket for that. But the behavior, again, was correct.
But I got another problem when you talk about safety. The half street is not a safe street. And you look all over Clark County where you have these barricades out by Evergreen High School where you go from four lanes or five lanes or six lanes into two lanes immediately. And you go for several miles that way. And the half streets, and that's what's going on up above Brian's house right now. There's a half street up there. Fire trucks can't even drive down that half street.
I remember not too long back we were having an issue with the schools. And they said, well, we just don't have any money at all. And we looked into the public request, and they had $5 million in the emergency fund. And we reminded them that that could be the emergency. That so $5 million would be nice to put just a gravel lot out there. So I find in many cases it's an excuse that they use quite often.
Thank you.
We'll leave
Thank
with
you.
You.
So we'll see you soon.
Yeah, appreciate you being there. Thanks.
Well
Thank
done,
you.
Carolyn.
Thank you.
You.
Yeah.
Our new Steve Schulte.
Yeah, doing well, Carolyn.
Steve
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You were showing it.
I said, woohoo, well done. Your first time going to bat.
Yep.
At home run.
Yeah, long ball.
We have any do-overs in old business?
No.
No? Mr. Barnes, what do you have?
Well, I got a couple quick things. One thing that I don't know if you've guys seen this or not. If you've got a copy of this, I'll make sure you do get a copy of it.
Thank you.
And it says, without economic development, economic growth is limited.
Absolutely.
And so my request to the commission is, again, that we get back in partnership with the Clark County Economic Development Council.
We are. You sit on that board, right?
Well, but I mean, the counties, you're using state money to be a partner with them, David.
We don't have to give it.
I know that. But
you don't think that's $275,000?
Right. But I think that we need to be a full partner. When you talk about partnership with the neighborhoods, you talk about partnerships with Calhoun County, you talk about all these partnerships, then we need to be a better partner with the Clark County Economic Development.
Good part of the CRUDC.
I know.
And in fact, we even allow our economic development people to work with them.
But a lot of people don't feel that way, Tom. So anyway, that's my comment.
Here's what the partnership looks like to me. Is what we just signed with the Port of Vancouver.
Right.
And we are a good working partnership, and they're not asking us to give them hundreds of thousands of dollars for that privilege. It's a mutually beneficial relationship.
Yeah, but at one point in time, I'm going to argue with you a little bit over that. One point in time, because the port supported Columbia River Crossing, they were a dirty old rat, just like everybody else in the community that supported Columbia River Crossing. And now all of a sudden, we have a use for the port being a partner with us in order to be able to develop the railroad and a 600-acre industrial park, David. Things change and times, you know.
That wasn't the reason.
Yeah, there's a reason. But
no, that wasn't the reason, Ed.
Okay.
So why'd we drop our chamber membership from Battleground?
I'm telling you, I still think that Clark County needs to sit down with them. Regardless, we can have these little get-togethers with the Clark County Identity, with the Chamber of Commerce, all the rest of them. We can go circle around the block and come back, and the answer will still be the same. We need to become back with those people, have those people respect us and we respect them the way it used to be. And I hear all kinds of stories when I go to those meetings, and that needs to come to a screeching halt. I've told you guys that ever since I started on the commission. So it needs to stop. The other thing,
before you go on,
okay, go ahead.
Conversation.
Okay, you need resolve. Okay, you need to know the truth.
Yes,
Paul Harvestein.
I don't know what stories you heard, but we want to extend goodwill to every economic development engine in this county. And that includes the Port of Ridgefield, it includes the Port of Camas Washougal, it includes the CREDC, all of those with goodwill. We don't say anything bad about them, and I hope you're not hearing anything bad from them about us. Mike Bomar is doing a very good job as their new leader, and I assume that you're serving as an ambassador of goodwill, representing the commission. The commissioner is here to them, and if there's anything that we can do to work together better, then let us know. You're our ambassador to them. I would say this, though, that when this county was paying them $100,000 a year, one of the things they were doing with that money was to lobby our legislature to do exactly the opposite of what the citizens who pay those taxes. Hear me out. And I had a problem with that. It is unfair to tax citizens and then give it to someone to lobby against those citizens to do exactly what the citizens voted not to do. So I have a problem with that. I'm not going to give them money. But if they want to develop jobs and business and all the things that helps us to be successful in that, then all the power to them, and I would work in whatever we can to do
that. Out of 500,000 people in Clark County, David, are you saying 8,000 people that voted are the majority of the people in Clark County?
I'm saying that
8,000 people versus 500,000, come on.
I don't know what you're speaking of there, but I can say elections mean something, and whatever it is, there's no confusion.
But they didn't vote on the bridge. Like I told you before, they voted on...
Not going to the bridge. Not going to the bridge, guys. Item number two. Okay.
Yep, moving on.
All right. I tried to call your friend twice up in Skamania County. I left the commissioner up there, Mr. Borg, about the problem that they have with the resolution.
Oh, Chris Wrong.
Yeah, so I left two messages, one on his office phone, one on his cell phone, over last week sometime. I've never received a call back, so I just wanted to tell you that I did call him to try to help him out somewhat.
I will call Chris and have him call you, because I sit with Chris on two governing boards. He's a good commissioner.
The other thing I thought was interesting, I went to the aging thing last night, and this is their legislative agenda that's recommended by their panelists, and there's some things on here, and one of them on here that's quite interesting. It says Clark County, it's item number 39, so maybe you can make copies of that. There's some items on there that have to do with apprenticeship. There's items on there that have to do with getting the state to give up fees to get somebody to do this and somebody to do that for the aging, or to privatize different parts of...
So what's the
action? You want to privatize?
No. Private? It depends.
They're asking us for help?
Well, they're asking for us to help support them on this political agenda at the legislature.
Oh, so who's this?
Make a copy of
who's this?
The aging.
Right.
Committee on Aging.
Okay, we'll be happy to. So we're going to get copies of it and look at it.
So we'll take a look at it and maybe talk to our lobbyist.
Right. Yeah, he's coming down again, right, Axel?
He's scheduled to come down soon.
Yeah.
The other thing I want to push again, I think that after Gary Lucas was here the other day, and I still see the paper every day, I pick up the paper and... there isn't probably a family in Clark County or maybe people sitting around this table that doesn't have some part of their family or somebody that they know has some kind of a mental disorder, maybe a mental problem that needs to be looked at and taken care of and not stuck in a jailhouse over here with common criminals. So I'm going to say, before I get out of here, I'd like to see the commission dedicate 1%, take the 1% dedicated to build this future facility over here in Clark County on the other side that has to do with separating the people, have mental problems away from the jailhouse problem to give. And they have a good proposal. I looked at it with Rick over there. They got a thing that's been mapped out, all the blueprints and the whole nine yards there's getting to be so many mental problems, and even in the younger people that are getting arrested over here that does not belong in with the common criminals. So I would say to dedicate the 1% strictly for the funding of to build that facility over there, and just not lock it into a lockbox where it could be spent for any other purpose. And when the facility was paid for by that 1%, then it would sunset and discontinue. So I think that it's something that's really worthwhile. And after, like I say, seeing Gary Lucas over there, you might even call it the Gary Lucas Center or something like that, and to give him a little thank you for all the years of support that he did.
Well, I haven't heard about that. It's 1% of what?
The 1% that you are legally allowed to take under the state law.
The property tax levy.
We already did that.
Well, you can do it every year.
We had the crash, there was an increase in sales tax.
Right, but the Commissioner Barnes was talking about the property tax 1% that the board is entitled to take every year that the board has not taken.
Oh, you're talking about raising property taxes.
Yeah. And taking the increment.
But it would be dedicated for infrastructure for the county. And right now you don't have the wherewithal to do it, but if you set this money aside, and I've heard you tell me before, David, we need to have the money, pay for it, then build it.
And the idea of planning ahead and saving ahead little by little, year by year, is certainly a financially sound way to move forward. I'd like to learn more about it. So if there is a vision, if there is a plan, then, Mark, can you help us to understand what that is?
And they could look and see what that 1% currently would amount to. That's the amount of money that you would collect for that. But it would only go for this purpose only, to build that facility over there that needs to be built.
I invite more information. So it sounds like it would be a good thing. Let's learn more.
Okay. There's a couple things. One, for mentally ill people, they are asking for, besides the 4 we gave them for staff and the new 8 deputies, they're now asking for another 2 or 4 people in the new budget request for people to be processed as they leave the jails.
Yep.
But there again,
but that's separate.
Tomorrow we get our word from Budget Bob as to who we're going to rob that from.
Right.
So I think the question is there to stop that revolving door of mentally ill people. Right. And I think we've done a real good job with our specialty courts, and we pay more for that. We've added judges over there. We've added more money to indigent defense. And there's so much in a piece of pie that if you're going to take it from someplace, or you're going to give something to someplace, you got to take it from someplace else.
But as the population grows, you're 500,000 now. They're saying by 2030 you're going to be 900,000 people in Clark County. So you're going to have just that many more people. And like I say, I've watched them over there and seen what they're doing. I know some people got over there. I know 2 of them. One of them jumped over a rail, killed himself, had a mental disorder, couldn't stand being in there with them. The other guy hung himself that had a mental problem, not a problem because he had a family problem, had a breakup of his marriage, and that had nothing to do with him being a common criminal, but he was thrown in with the people that have.
We revamped our jails 2 years ago.
I know that.
After we had the suicides.
Yeah, right.
And
Over the long time, Tom.
I know. And then down river, you were down there with me. Whole jail facility was nearly a ghost town.
Yeah.
So they have a facility down there that we're not using. And I'm not quite sure if this is where they want to build a new jail or not.
The concept is on the south side of the existing jail, where they have parking, would be to build an additional structure and connect it to the jail that exists today.
The new concept is we don't take the prisoners into the jail now. We put them on TV, and the judge talks to them on TV right there. That way you don't have to transport your prisoner,
right.
And you have less cases of or problems of happening. So that's what we started to go to, and then we've had a
but you have a nice set of blueprints and everything, David, you could look
at. I'd love to see it. Okay, so just a little bit more about the individuals that come into the jail, those that have that have mental health problems. We already authorized, and they already have, to exit officers that if they have mental health problems, these ones are get them on their feet and make it so that they don't have to come back in again. The problem is that if they don't have mental health issues, they basically need some to learn personal responsibility and learn how to be able to make better decisions, and they don't have those kind of issues, they don't get help.
Right.
And this would provide... They'd like to have more than one, but we can start with one, and I think that's what's in the proposed budget tomorrow.
I agree.
So that they don't have health problems, they can get them the kind of help on the way out so they don't have to come back. And Peter Van Nordwijk already saved the money. He's saving $1 million, and that's where the money is already coming from. You shift it from something where savings is identified elsewhere, and so he should really be congratulated. He's doing more accurate work on time for the first time in years, and yet saving $1 million so that we can afford this position.
But but that's not $10 or $15 million to build a facility that's going to service a whole lot of people, David.
$80 million.
So all I'm saying is, if you set the 1% aside, lock it in for that specific purpose.
We're talking about several things, the budget with the one exit officer would be one of them. That's a step in the right direction we can do, because we have some very good leadership here and with an elected official.
And we've made, in the last couple of years, lots of changes, lots of yes. additions to our Sheriff's Department. What else do you have, Ed?
Okay. Yeah. Last week, or when you were gone, I brought up the fact of building a tower or some kind of a facility out there at the Heritage Farm, mm-hmm. Where the grave sites are at for the injured people who are out at the Heritage Farm, up on the hill up there, Tom. Most beautiful view that you ever want to see of Portland and Vancouver. You talk about attracting tourists and stuff, but also something that have to do with all of those graves that are around there and a trail. And why I bring it up again today, Carol, that's Citizens United. I was having a conversation with her, and she was telling me about her as a young lady riding horses, David, when you and I were having a conversation about the gentleman I was telling you that rode horses all around through up there where those grave sites are at. She was telling me as a young person she did the same thing, and so we were talking about develop that into trails and different stuff up there. And, of course, Mark showed you a beautiful master plan for up there. So I would like to see if there's some way that we could get some citizens involved in it, and maybe somebody like Carol would be willing to step forward, and some other people to start looking at the process in this thing, and maybe raise some private funds mm-hmm. to build it.
Yeah, and that sounds
maybe
good.
Some trade labor.
Yes. Yep. Yeah.
Like you did for the historical museum.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep.
Very
and
good.
And the Kaiser Tower, on the Kaiser Tower, we build all that stuff for free.
Sure.
A lot of stuff. So anyway,
that's another thought. That sounds good. So I don't want your thoughts to just simply be said and then we forget about them. The question is, what can we do about that? And I would assume that, Mark, you'll bounce that off. What would that be? The Parks Advisory Board? Who would help bring leadership to that?
That property is managed by Laura Peterson across the hall.
Yeah.
So, but I would the budget for the Heritage Farm is small.
Next to zero.
Yeah, it's... we keep the place mowed, we keep the brush under control, we heat the building for WSU, we maintain the building, fix the irrigation system when it breaks, provide support to the tenants on the property and that sort of thing. There is no money to build a structure on that property.
So we talked about a safer road to get in there. Yeah. Didn't have money for that.
Yeah.
Here's it'd
be a good thing to do.
But you go to Rocky Butte or any of these places over there, you could look all over Portland.
Astoria Tower.
Yeah. All kinds.
Was about a month and a half ago now, there is a piece of property that was only used for erosion control. And we approved it to get it out of that silo so it could also be multi-use. It could be considered as a environmental park and that kind of thing. And potentially, we could do something like this when it comes to the Heritage Farm, some of those amenities there, because it gives you access to grants. It opens up, it could be a parks process or volunteers. It gets it out of the silo so that it is a multi-use. Could we do that? Could we look into that?
Mm-hmm. There's some strings attached to that. And so I'm not quite sure how far we could expand that park that's on 68th. That's what you're talking about. That's what the hill is back
oh,
there.
Oh, yeah, up on the hill.
Hazeldale Park is on the south side.
You can drive up there now and go around.
Yeah,
and see
what's
the
that? Hazeldale
Park? Hazeldale
Park. The name of it?
That's right and off.
Yeah. It's off
the 68th. Expand that over there for the walking
together,
path.
It's off of 68th Street.
So
it'd be interesting to see what kind of a plan they have, because I know there's a plan, and it's been pushing back and forth. And
yeah,
so
we've had
fixed
at Hazeldale Park a lot of times.
So then the thing to pursue would be to find out what would, if there's an available process for us to be able to somehow get that out of the silo and allow that to be open to park resources as well.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Laura has talked to Heath and to Bill Bjerke about parks taking it on, but as you know, the parks budget is severely strained, and they are reluctant to do so.
But Bob wants more money.
We will continue the conversation.
Okay. Well, it doesn't necessarily obligate us to start putting a whole bunch of money out there, or any money out. It just simply says there are two resources for that common area, and even if it opens it up to Karen Llewellyn and all those hundreds of volunteers who want to build the trail or something like that, it creates an opportunity for those free resources at least to move it in the right direction.
Yeah, people involved.
So, you know, if you do work with trade, see if materials could be donated and labor be donated to help construct a foundation that we could put a structure on.
Yeah, maybe talk to somebody like John Rooney down there at Thompson Metal Fab. Mm-hmm. Have him build a structure and put it on a truck and take it up there and put the foundation in and
How high are you talking about going after this? We're worried about the mentally ill people jumping off and bringing it out.
It's 5 or 6
well,
feet.
Well, there hasn't been one of them jump off of that 100-foot tower down there we built for Kaiser.
Yeah,
nobody's even done anything.
You wouldn't need a tower to take advantage of the view.
Yeah.
The view is already exquisite.
True.
From
there.
Yeah.
And the master plan actually contemplated a gazebo-style structure that you could put picnic tables in and people could have weddings there. They could do all kinds
maybe,
of
things. Maybe some more off-street parking on the south end.
Yeah. Maybe you're thinking of something more like Windler Park, where you've got that structure to right on the waterfront park there, that inside the city.
Have something that people notice from the other side of the river, maybe. That draws people over here.
Are you thinking like the tower, what do they call that thing, the column in Astoria?
Yeah.
The 200-foot high.
So
people are there all the
time. That's a big vision, but a little step in that direction would be just simply to say, what can we do for get a bunch of volunteers out there to build the trail and so that at least people can stand and look and enjoy that beautiful view at ground level.
Some of these roads would have to be engineered and designed. And all these road contractors that you get that's doing all the work for the county, they could go out there and do that work for free.
start with bigger parking on the south side.
Hey, was that your last item?
One other quick item.
Oh, no.
On the 6th of October, the commissioners all received a fee waiver audit from Greg Kimsey. And in that thing, he said, you have 10 days to get back to me with any modifications or ever in the cover letter. And so, anyway, it's been 16 days since I got back to him and told him what I thought about the thing. And I don't know if you and Tom have got back to him and said anything about the fee waiver.
It's been rescheduled, and I've been waiting for the graph that actually shows the real trend data that would speak for itself when it comes to sustainability, and I understand we're very close to getting that. So that is an important part of my response, that the data speak for itself.
Yeah, I would add that Marty Snell sent the auditor a memorandum under his signature where he provided remarks as Director of Community Development, the one who's actually executing the program. And I can get you a copy of that. I'll get each of the board members a copy of that response. But I offered Commissioner Medora the opportunity to draft a reply on behalf of the board that you certainly will get to read before it goes anywhere because of his leadership in this area and his interest in the program. He has asked for some financial data to help support the response that he's writing, and three charts. He has two. One chart is just about done. I have to modify it, and when I do, I'll give it to him. And then
I'm ready to go.
Then he'll finish up his response and share it with you.
And this will go to Craig Kimby, his auditor's office, and then they'll have to either agree or disagree with what you put together.
And it'll become a formal part of the audit.
So if Craig and him says no, that his auditors disagree with what has been put together,
he's free to disagree.
Huh?
He's free to disagree.
So anyway, then who is the deciding factor then?
There isn't one.
When the audit comes out.
I assume he's also free to agree.
Policymakers. You know, my spin on that is that
sometimes auditors and those audited don't agree, and and they agree to disagree.
And I assume that when we actually look at the real numbers, and even the auditors didn't have access to this information, so now that we're going to have this, it would be hopefully enlightening to all of us, and we'll all let the truth speak, because it does not. Hopefully, we'll minimize the opinions and just simply let the data speak for itself, and it should be very obvious to us whether or not we have sustainability or not. And I'm looking forward to getting that third graph that'll allow us to be able to make it so obvious.
So with these figures, you're going to go to Warshugel and you're going to say to Warshugel, how many jobs have you created? Then you're going to go to Camas and say, how many jobs they created? You're going to go to Battleground, say how many jobs they created, Le Centre, Richfield, and Vancouver, and then you're going to total up those numbers, and then whatever they come to, then the county will have whatever's left over from that, or the numbers that you put together, David, going to take credit for everything that everybody else has done in the county, all the cities, the jobs that they've created. That's not a true audit.
Well, how many jobs have they created?
I don't know. That's what I'm asking.
I know that we have a total of 5,800 in Clark County.
You asked a question. Can I answer it?
Yeah.
Okay. Yesterday, our regional economist, Scott Bailey, published his report for the latest month, which is September.
Oh, I want to see that.
You want
go
to see
ahead.
It?
No, go ahead.
Okay.
I haven't seen it
And
yet.
For an additional month, I don't know how many months it's been running now, Clark County is the number one job-growing, fastest-growing county in the Northwest, Oregon and Washington. And I'm not going to claim causation for that, and I'm not looking for blame or for credit, but that's really good news. And whatever it is, we went from being near the bottom when it comes to the employment and economy in the whole region here. We were near the bottom several years ago, and now we are number one. And whatever it is, I'm thinking, well, we're not doing something wrong here. It looks like we're doing something right. And just maybe, we don't know, but just maybe, our business friendliness is having, it affects that. Because the private sector, the free market, is saying whatever it is, we're going to build in Clark County, and that's good enough for
me. But when you say Clark County, you're encompassing every city in Clark County, David.
Yeah.
And you're encompassing every job that each one of those created. Mm-hmm. Clark County didn't create all those jobs. Those various different cities, municipalities within Clark County created jobs.
Then you got the
government jobs, the state highways jobs, all these other different jobs that the county had no control over, creating those jobs or the money. So you have, in order to get a true figure, you have to separate that out. In order to get a true figure, you can skew numbers any way you want to skew them in order to do that. And that's what bothers me, that start putting the thing in. Bailey is not, and I'm going to call Scott and tell him he needs to separate it out by cities and by the different groups.
Yeah, it's not fair. First of all, under the urban growth boundary rules that we have, or the Growth Management Act, we're not to promote businesses outside the urban growth boundaries. In fact, we're restricted from it. So let us open up the rest of the county and compete with the cities. I think it'd be a whole lot different.
You know, I got a project you could do that with and create a lot of jobs. But
tell me the numbers. We were almost twice as high as everybody else.
Well, I would say we are not competitors with the cities. We are good neighbors with the cities.
And the ports.
And the ports. And whatever is good for them is good for us and vice versa. So I would love to be able to know what the breakdown is for each of the cities.
And the ports.
And the ports. Yeah, it'd be great to know that. I don't know how to know that, but it would be good to, if Scott Bailey, I don't know who else would do it, would be able to have a breakdown. but in any case, whatever it is, who cares who gets the credit? Well, we're number one.
I understand that, but I don't want a report to come out that says that Clark County is
the most business-friendly community on the West Coast?
Well, no, they can be the most business-friendly. I'm all for business and that, but I'm not for putting figures together, David, that gives Clark County full credit for what everybody else has done within the county.
Well, nobody's looking for credit, but the report is out there. I published it on my Facebook page yesterday, the actual report, and let Scott Bailey just simply publish the information. And so let's not give credit where credit isn't due. In fact, we don't need to give credit at all. All we need to do is just thank God and just cheer for Clark County because whoever, all the cities and the unincorporated area, we're in this together as a family and we're doing really well.
And that's why we need to join the Economic Development Council.
Well, I'm glad you're sitting on that. I'm glad you're sitting on that board. Okay. Make sure you bring a good positive message to them for us.
I did every time. I've never said
great.
Anything
thank
bad.
You.
That's it.
I'm
Mr.
good.
Mr. Medora?
I'm good.
You're good?
Mm-hmm.
Axel?
Well, we're working on a lot of things. The one legislative stuff will start to heat up here, and one of the things, I had a brief conversation with Commissioner Medora about it, and I haven't had a chance, but you've seen it. All three of you were emailed a list, a legislative state policy statement from the Clark County Transportation Alliance. They're asking for our support. They've got a whole list of different agencies, cities, and folks who have signed on. We've signed on in the past to their policy statement, but I think this year we'll need to take a look at it. So we'll do that over the course of this week. Maybe we can talk about it next week, because I think there's some things on here we'll support for sure, and maybe some things we'll need to talk about. So anyhow.
So before you go further on that, the natural response for us would be able to look at that list and say yes, no, yes, no, yes, no.
We already had a list.
Well, this is a new one.
I know, but we had a list before.
That was from WASAC.
That took, no, we had a list where all the cities and the counties made a list. We had about 10 projects on there of no order that we all signed off on. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
this is the same group that drove forward with all the projects a mile long and then drove through with the I-5 bridge on it, and that's when we got separated. I would like to go back to we keep creating these groups of people, and I'd like to go back to the original partners and that original alliance and come back together as a legislative desire where we all agree on all the projects.
Yeah, and we actually, I thought we came to a pretty good consensus last year. I can't remember what it was.
It wasn't that list.
What I'll do is pull up the letter we did sign last year with the groups that we did, and it had that list, so maybe we'll start there.
Let's do that, yeah. I don't know why I did the Clark County wants to drive forward with a new list.
Well, I dealt with them when I was on the Transportation Commission in 1995.
I dealt with them as a legislator, too. It's agenda-driven.
I agree, that's a good point. So you're going to bring that list back to us?
Yeah, why don't we just start with our letter from last year?
Sure.
That'd be a good point, because we know that. And then we'll put it back through the city and say, are we still partners on all this agreement? And I don't know if that came from, I don't think it came from RTC, but the list started from there, I think.
Actually, it was a collaboration. Each one of us did participate in contributing to that list.
Yeah, last year.
It was a good one. Anything else, Axel?
No.
Thank you for taking the lead on that. Peter, anything?
Nothing that you're not already clear on.
Mary?
No, I'm listening to
you. Oh, good. That needs me a lot of time. All right.
I'm going to wait for the board to get chair to give me the nod.
I want to remind us that we need to do something to make some decisions on that property there, the old paint store on 139th.
We're getting an appraisal done on it?
All right.
So that it can go out for surplusing.
Great.
When do we expect that?
A couple months.
What's wrong with next week?
It could have happened.
Why?
Because the appraiser needs time.
It's hardly acceptable. Go get a different appraiser. I think our assessor probably has a list.
Our real property section is a super professional outfit. They told me it's going to take a couple months to do, and
is it scheduled?
I can't make cheese out of orange juice.
I deal in real estate quite often. And
I'll have Heath come talk to you, and he can bring his real property.
Okay, so to translate that, I think what you're asking for is please move it along as quickly as you can.
Which is what we're doing.
And you're coming back with, so there's, you're not waiting for any decision from us.
No, you're on it. No, they're moving out smartly.
Okay, great. That's good.
Have our assessor join in that conversation, because I think he might have someone help us out sooner.
I'll talk to the public.
I'm not understanding why we have such a delay here, or what the deal is.
Okay. We're going too fast, Clark County.
Stop that. Where are we? We talked about this, and I'm not sure quite what we've done. We've had several cases repeatedly come back and fall in our face about us selling property for whatever reason, and the property not being buildable property. On the private sector, we have to do a disclosure when we sell real estate. And for some reason, the Clark County doesn't do that. We'll sell a piece of property that's not available repeatedly, and the person buys it, finds out he can't build on it. This tax go to the delinquent. We repossess or foreclose on it, take the property back, auction it back off. That's not serving the people of Clark County. And I think we need to have some type of a policy in place that has them do a couple-hour research on every piece of property before they auction it off, and discloses if this is a buildable piece of property, if it's a strip of piece of property, a vacated, so that people know what we're selling. So
you want a warranty that the property is buildable.
Can I translate that?
No, that's disclosure of what
let me translate that.
Excuse me. Disclosure of what we know.
Yeah.
That's all we have to do. Disclosure of what we know.
Can I add a little bit to that? There's two extremes on that. We're at one extreme now that we don't even disclose what we know is obvious it's not buildable. And the other extreme is that we warranty for sure this is a buildable piece of property, and we don't want to be at either one of those extremes. Instead, I think what you're asking for is what we know, if we know it's not buildable for some reason that's easily discoverable here in the county, that we would reveal that. And it's not going to the point where we are guaranteeing that it is buildable, but at least it is providing the full disclosure of what we already know as obvious, it's not ever going to be buildable.
Okay. Obvious based on what level of effort?
Zoning, some other legal...
So we have to do a soil study to determine whether or not the soil is percable and whether or not a septic system can be put on it?
No, that's going to the legal extreme logic of saying we guarantee it. We're not guaranteeing it's going to be buildable. But instead, we're revealing if it's known not buildable, and it's obvious because of our records here that's known not buildable, then we would reveal that.
Okay. We're a buyer beware state, and at this point, I'm going to ask Chris Cook to weigh in, because
could I make one comment?
We're delving into legal issues here.
We're not selling a little car
here. Before we go too far, the person that's involved, that's in charge of this, I think it's only fair that we invite the treasurer up here, Doug Lasher, up here to tell us just exactly what the treasurer is currently doing and what the paperwork is that they put out to these people when they go out there. Because I stood out there last Friday and watched the people bid on different pieces of property out there, and I don't think that any soul that bid on the property out there was not aware of what he was bidding
on. The treasurer.
That
is not the county treasurer on the street corner.
Well, no.
Auctioning off properties.
Right.
He uses a website.
Right. But
and he has all kinds of disclosures out there.
But I'm saying, though, he needs to be up here so that you can
answer your questions, David, what they're doing, what Tom's doing. Nobody actually knows what he's doing, how they're selling the property, and we're not giving him the benefit of the doubt to come up here and explain to us what they're doing.
They sell the property as is.
As is.
And they say the buyers are responsible for doing due diligence on
that.
The property.
I heard them say that.
And that complies with our state laws on
yes.
real estate.
And that's very clearly stated.
Yes, and let me contribute to this, because we've had this conversation about a year ago, and at least two times I've had citizens come in and say and give me the terrible story that they bought a piece of property, and then when they looked into it, that property had been sold multiple times, and this is one more victim, and we knew absolutely that it was not buildable because the previous buyer bought it thinking it could be buildable. It was not. That's why they ended up losing their money, and it happened again, and we never really revealed that. And here's the problem. And we've had the treasurer explain to us, and what we come back to is that we cover our bases. We sell it as is. You know, it's like we're not liable. It's we can do it. We're safe. We're not going to lose our shirt, but we can do better, because what we're doing now is like, if we know there's sawdust and there's gravel in the oil pan, and we know there's sugar in the gas tank, and we sell it anyway because we get the maximum value for it, we are not doing our customers a very good service.
But
if we know that it has problems, if we know already it has problems, we have an obligation to reveal that. It doesn't mean that we're going to sell the car anything other than as is, but at least they're informed as is of what we know what's wrong with that car.
So you have 1,000 pieces of property in Clark County that you eventually say we're going to take off the market, we can't sell for some reason or another, they're not ever going to be sold, then who is responsible for taking care of that property to make sure that the grass is mowed on it, it's not a fire hazard, it's not a dump yard for garbage and stuff like that? I mean, there's a whole lot of things that are involved with this, David, but like I say, I haven't heard the treasurer's side of it as to what he's doing. And a month ago, I think I made the same request when this was brought up again, that we invite the treasurer up here to tell us just exactly how they work it and what they're doing, mm-hmm. and he still hasn't been brought here.
Sure. Certainly I encourage you to talk with him, because I have sat down and talked with him about this.
I want him to come in here at the board where everybody
sure,
can hear
sure.
it at the
That's
same
fine.
Time.
And I want to make sure it doesn't get translated to something that's silly.
Yeah.
We are still going to sell all of the properties as is. Nobody's asking to do anything else than that. It's still selling as is. We're not changing that. But we're being forthright to disclose what we know.
How much time and effort?
I'm concerned about that. And the reasons I'm concerned are several, but one of them is if we disclose some things and not others. There is a legal standard that says things you should talk about, or you might be responsible to talk about things that you know or should have known. Where is it that the treasurer should have known this or that?
Libel.
It's a lot more difficult to draw that line in reality than it is, I think, otherwise. The people who buy these things have a responsibility to investigate them. They're getting them they're getting them at auction, and they're typically for, somewhat lower price than they would be if they were actually on the market for a non-foreclosure sale. Sometimes when you buy a bargain,
there's a reason.
Doesn't work out real well.
Chris, I understand that. They could pay the $600 or $800, whatever it is, for a legal lot disclosure or determination. They're not going to do that. But we can discover whether we can go through the equivalent of a legal lot determination before we bring it out there, so that we know whether or not, if they paid for it, whether or not it is a buildable lot, at least to that, with that little part of it. And yes, we can
we certainly don't want to get this out of balance to the point where somehow we are providing a warranty or somehow guaranteeing that it's going to be buildable. No, none of that, because that makes it silly and it makes it impractical. Instead, it's just simply disclosing what should be obvious, and potentially we'll get more money for those lots that are where there's less risk, because at least they know it hasn't that it passes the legal lot determination, and yes, they still have to determine whether or not it's on their own. Is it going to be perkable? Is it for other reasons not going to be buildable? But at least they know up front the equivalent of a legal lot determination.
But who would pay for the legal lot determination? I mean, there is a reason why those cost few hundred dollars.
Yeah, and I would...
We charge it.
Yeah,
all we have to do is look on our screen.
Right.
And we know it didn't cost a few hundred dollars.
Oh, no, it's not. It's not just a matter of... You know, sometimes it is, Commissioner, but I've also been involved in working on legal lot determinations that included meetings with two lawyers and two department heads, a private attorney, and a fair amount of research into obscure things that might have happened in the 1950s. So some of them are easy, and some of them most certainly aren't.
And I think what we're talking about is what we know. When we know it's not a buildable lot, and we've sold the same lot over and over again, I think we have some blame here. And I think that we should get up underneath that and be more serving.
Yeah, philosophically, I agree that if you've sold the lot repeatedly the owners don't keep it because it's not buildable, certainly mm-hmm. if you sell it again, it would seem logical that you would want to warn the next buyer that if you're planning to build on it, you know, forget it.
And the other one
there's
we
a
have.
Difference between legal lot and buildable, and that's what I'm
struggling. I understand.
With.
I understand.
There's lots of legal lots that are
we,
not buildable.
We get that. We get that. Mm-hmm.
But what's
and we don't want it
in buildable is the harder word. Because what's buildable for, well, it is.
Well,
I mean, I've worked with dozens of citizens
I get that. And that's not what we're not saying is it buildable. What we're really saying is it known not buildable? Big difference. All you need is here's the thing. Here's the thing. In order to have to build a lot, it's a chain with links. If we know there is a missing link, we don't care about the rest of them. The missing link says you're not going to build it because it doesn't have that link. If we know there's a missing link, that's enough. You don't have to go any further. It's not buildable.
Everything else is as is, where it is.
I want to build a coffee trailer about the size of this table on a lot that the street runs by, and all I do is bring in all the water, and I bring in all the food and stuff. They're all over Clark County. You see all these little coffee things out there on lots that are no bigger than this room. So if that's not a buildable, that's buildable for a purpose. You know, it's buildable maybe for Greg Kimsey to put a ballot box out there that he wants to put someplace up.
And tax it.
Taxes, yeah.
So the other one, a good example, we have one out there that has come up through a mistake or two. We end up with 6 acres out in North County that can't be built on.
Right.
And can never be made a legal lot. I think it's a legal lot, but can never be built on forever.
It's not a legal lot, and it could have. Are you talking about the one that's between the 20s?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Well,
could be recombined.
We know that's
that
not built.
Which was done about a year ago, is my understanding, when the law was pretty clear that you couldn't do that, and instead of trying to cut off a 6, if they lots instead of 3.
Yeah.
Well, let's research it a little bit. Let's get dug up here and try to work the thing
out. That'd be good.
And get the information
next week. We'll do that. We'll just bring up and ask him.
That's fine. Let me just finish up what you just had there.
Okay.
Chris, think about this for a minute. Suppose that 6-acre lot got auctioned down here. Most buyers would think it's 6 acres. And it's like, it ought to be buildable. It looks like every reasonable reason. It's like, oh, it's flat, it's, you know, workable, all that good stuff. It was building. So he'll buy it and then find out afterwards what we already knew up front, if not buildable, and we didn't somehow say so.
If I were going to spend tens of thousands of dollars on a lot, I would at least look at the zoning. And I might call the county and say, what do you think about this lot? Doesn't an individual investor have some responsibility for how they choose to invest?
Mm-hmm. They're not, they don't become... They don't become an investor until they get the winning bid. And they're not going to bid to win unless they know. And when they call the county could say, yeah, you want to pay $150 to answer that question? They're going to say, no.
Something I don't own yet that I
yeah,
might not own.
Yeah, because I might get outbid. And yet we knew all along. All we had to do was say, yeah, well, we already know it's not buildable.
Okay, well, I think somebody suggested a little research and then come back.
There you go.
Yeah, let's, can we stick with that?
Good. Okay, something else I want to share is that our gun ordinance, through our research, we found out that we already have things in our existing ordinance that kind of covers what we thought we were going to try to do.
Yeah, we've always had the ability to tell employees yes.
Yeah. And
now, the workplace violence policy differs somewhat from the code, however.
Yeah,
so there may need to be a clarification made.
But down to PA's office... several of those people have permission to carry, legally, and we have the same thing here, and that's what's kind of surprising. And the only thing was that we were looking at those that requested to do so, that they'd be aware of what we expect if they bring their concealed weapon onto the property. So. I guess what I want to share is the good thing is that we're not rewriting an ordinance.
Right.
We're clarifying what we have. And we're still working on that. I understand our panhandling.
Yeah, we have a hearing scheduled on that. Axel knows the date.
Okay.
It's
scheduled for hearing.
It's coming up.
Bolin property still being worked on. We were looking for some right-of-way and some easement. And so we were going to write something up.
Paul Bolin?
Heath Henderson checked base with him earlier this week. He said their proposal is at the PA's office for approval, so that is moving forward.
Great. Okay. We'll check next week. Okay.
No, that was for a right-of-way license agreement.
Yes.
For Mr.
And do we have the change to the home business coming ready
that's
for a hearing?
That's been set to, drafted and sent to the state for comment.
Yeah, Commerce has 60 days to comment.
Okay. And Painter, I already asked you about.
Oh, let me correct myself, Commissioner. Your intuition on lag time for appraisals was right on the money. I misremembered what Steve Hansen told me. 3 weeks.
That's more.
More better.
More better. So forgive my error.
Oh, you're
forgiven.
Okay. Yeah. I erred on the good side.
Yeah, right? On the good side.
I forgot how I was contacted. We were asked from one of the cemetery districts if we could help them out more. Now, it did include, whatever district it is, it included the Louisville Cemetery, and they have taxing authority as a cemetery district, so I wasn't real clear on that, and I didn't know if either of you had been contacted or you.
I'm not aware.
I'll do some more follow-up on this.
Get some help for that. Get one for some help for Pioneer, too, at the same time.
Commissioner, back to the home business ordinance.
Yes.
The state does have 60 days to comment on that, but do you want to go ahead and have them put the public hearing on the schedule in January for that?
Because
it will require a public hearing to amend that ordinance.
We can't do it before January.
I don't know that we have any openings before the end.
We're jamming as much in as we can
already. I heard we're busy.
That would be after. That would allow you some flexibility if there are any openings.
Is that the path? Does it go through Planning Commission?
It goes through Planning Commission.
So whatever the normal process is, we give notice to.
I don't know about you other guys, but I, after our presentation today by Oliver,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to have a pretty busy one-on-one, having him explain a couple things to me.
Okay.
One of concern was the new expansion across I-5 at the La Center Junction.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't look sad. We did talk about lot sizes here today. We started addressing our concerns. That's good. Oliver. That's an Oliver thing. So I talked to Budget Bob, and he was talking about the Cresta tillers. And after we talked a while, they talked about the air conditioning units up on top. And he had a pretty big number there to purchase new ones. And I asked him, could we get a estimate on rebuilding what we have? I had a friend who used to be in charge of the Battleground School District buildings. And he explained to me one time that he had just had them all rebuilt. And then they came back up and wanted to buy all new ones. And he says, I have more faith in the ones that we rebuild than I do for one I don't know anything about that's just brand new. So I'm going to move forward with make sure that they understand we'd like to see a comparison for a 100% rebuild on those to make them like new, because I know that they're very, very expensive. And the reason I was looking at that, because it was a request with big red brackets around it in our budget. And I was thinking of a better way to do that.
But you also got to look at the warranty thing, too. When you buy a new one, a big chiller like that from a company, that probably got a 10-year warranty on it or maybe longer. Because I used to deal with them all the time. And to rebuild something like that, you know, you might be able to get somebody that might be qualified to do it, but then you might get somebody that might be a hash artist to tell you he isn't, put it together, and 6 months later you've got the same
problem. Well, you know
who those
electricians are. I think we better get a good estimate.
I know that. I
liaison with Cresta, Commissioner Mielke. Is that something you want me to get them involved with, or more information, or do you just
want to say again?
Well, I liaison with Cresta, and I work with Anna Pendergrass and a lot of different stuff. Dave, do you want some more information on any of that in terms of the
probably
request?
Somewhere between our administrator and the people in charge.
It's a facilities issue.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so. And Anna is well aware of the chiller issue. Part of the issue, too, is that when those chillers were installed, we had far fewer people in the Cresta building, and we had far less computer equipment generating considerably less heat. Now, on the flip side, we have more efficient equipment in our server room, smaller, capable of operating at higher temperatures and so on. So we need less cooling there, but we need more cooling in the Cresta building itself. Now, I might add that brand-new equipment would be quite a bit more sophisticated. For example, the boilers that were in the courthouse that we just replaced were ancient units that you had to be in front of in order to diagnose or adjust physically with your hands. The new boilers we have, Chris Jackson, before he goes to bed at night, can look on his smartphone and look how those boilers are doing, and he can do maintenance procedures using his phone. So brand new equipment would bring some benefits that rebuilding old equipment wouldn't.
Well, this is has a big red bracket around that figure.
Yes, that's because it's a one-time usage of fund balance.
And we don't have the money. We're going to take it from someplace else.
Actually, tomorrow you will find out that even buying those chillers, we're going to have a little bit left over.
I saw that, but we didn't meet all of the requests.
No, we did not. That's a fact.
Okay, Mr. Administrator, that's all I have.
Okay. I can't match that. But
Rob Peter paint mold.
That's right.
I just heard him say that the assessor didn't say that.
I'm just trying to put an electrician.
That's not Robin Peter. That's Peter saying, "Here, I'll save you some money, Paul."
Yeah. Don't hire any people or lay people off in order to be.
Yeah. Okay. Well, speaking of hiring people, we have three requests here. They're all from Public Works.
Yeah.
One is a grounds maintenance crew chief. He supervises folks that take care of our parks in North County. He is going to retire, and that position will be vacant on December 1st. So Public Works is doing a good job getting out in front of their vacancy. So I would like permission to replace it.
I'll tell you a little story about this kid.
Okay.
His dad and I were personal friends, hunting buddies, and that I knew Hal before he was ever born. This kid is getting ready to retire. I didn't even know he was working for the county until I seen this.
Oh, is that right?
Seen this sheet here and picked up. His sister used to work for the
county. We need to get out more.
Yeah.
I looked at all three of these Heath Henderson for Public Works. Big fan. He's running his department very, very well. And I have a green light for all three of them.
segment. Did you read the primary duties of function for a senior engineering technician?
I did.
So it's not a degreed engineer, I take it.
Well, he has to have survey training, that's for sure.
They got a primary duties and functions. It's got it pretty well listed there, what the guy has to know before they hire him, replacement.
Yeah, it's a highly skilled person, all right.
And he retired 5 months ago. So I'd like to hold off on that until next week.
Okay.
Some of the other ones that we had, because they were in the middle of these projects, we hired immediately. This one here, we haven't had anybody in that position for 6 months or so through construction season. And we're winding down now with our construction season, so if I can get another week on that, I appreciate it.
And okay. Commissioner Barnes, any time any of us ask for an extra week to look into these vacancies, we grant that courtesy because it means we can have one-on-one conversations behind the scenes and do our homework and make sure we spend grandma's money carefully.
And then the,
but I still stand with the second of the motion, even though we're taking another week.
The one at the treatment plant doesn't come vacant until December, and that is the one that we don't have time to delay on. So I think that I can support that one being filled. Okay. Right. And the other one is the ground maintenance person. Doesn't come vacant until December. That one I'd like to hold off on.
But we have to recruit. We have to announce and recruit and interview and evaluate. And
Our grounds maintenance crew, the crew chief, we probably don't need until next March or April.
You mean there's no winter maintenance on the parks? No upkeep on the
parks?
Well,
why don't we do this? On those that you have questions on, why don't you have conversations behind the scenes and come back next week.
Okay,
and
I'll
get
do
Heath,
that.
Get Heath to come in and explain why he wants
well,
to
he can,
go.
Well, he can go talk with you.
I got me, yeah. I'm good.
You'll talk to him on both?
I will.
Okay.
I will.
All right, so the office assistant, too, is the only one being approved at the treatment plant?
Yes.
And the others will come back next week.
I was going to say something, but I won't.
You amended your
motion. Yeah, it would be off color, wouldn't it?
It would off color.
It's just more informal.
Okay, Commissioner Mielke, I have nothing else.
All right. I think we're done.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, everybody.